Welcome to the Aftershock Tension Podcast with Travis and Martin, the only people on this podcast that give two damns, apparently. Because where's Ronnie? I mean, I know we said that this week was an off week and we were wrong. We looked at the wrong schedule, apparently. But where is he?
He can roll with that as an excuse.
I mean, his exact words were, well, I can't record Tuesday, but I'll record Wednesday.
Yeah.
And here we are on a Wednesday, a new comic book day, and he's not here.
We're switching off episodes, I guess.
I guess that's probably true. That's probably true. This is probably a good place as any to say it. I'm going to be taking a couple of weeks off of podcasting, so I will not be in on the next episode. All right. Time to get started, Travis.
We'll get it done. Don't worry.
I believe in you. I believe in you. I don't know if we have news because Ronnie's a news guy and he's not here. So we're going to assume there's no news.
No, I haven't seen news. Yeah, I mean, solicits came out, but I don't think there are any new books that we haven't talked about. So,
oh, did they come out? Dude, I haven't even been on the internet in like 3 days. So I don't even know what's happening in the world right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's like all stuff we've talked about already.
Good.
So, but it looks good. I'm excited.
Very good. I like that. Don't announce, oh, you know what? You know what it is. New York Comic Con is in like 2 weeks. There's not going to be any announcements for 2 weeks. But I guarantee you, in 2 weeks there will be. All right, let's talk about these books. Let's talk about these books. We got two books to talk about today, Travis. We've got The Lost City Explorers number 4, and we have Patience, Conviction, Revenge. All very angrily titled with exclamation points. So, what do you want to tackle first?
You want to do, Lost City Explorers first?
Yeah, we can do that. Lost City Explorers, number 4, Zach Kaplan, Alvaro Saraceca. I love that name. I'm going to change my name to Saraceca. And, we've got colors by D. Kuniff and letters by A Larger World's Troy Pateri. And I believe, isn't A Larger World, Dave Sharp's company?
I heard somebody mention that. I don't know where I heard that, but yeah, it sounds likely.
Man, I'm going to start a company with letterers. That sounds awesome. Letterers, the most underrated.
It's a gold mine, dude.
Dude, the most underrated team members of any comic book.
But there's only like 10 letterers in all of comics.
That's true. But you know, the old saying in comics is, you only know a good letterer if you don't see their work. So that's why they're so underrated, because they're all so good that we don't appreciate them enough and nobody knows their names. That's what we call them out on every episode. All right, so let's talk about this this issue. I'm going to preface by saying that I enjoyed this one a lot more than the last issue. And the reason for that is...
That's great.
Yeah, the reason for that is I felt like more happened in this issue than in the last one. Although it still felt much lighter than the first two. But I thought there was some good character development in here. I think there was some good progression in the story in this one. And I dug it quite a bit more.
So you're saying, that a lot more happened?
Not a lot more, but more than the last issue.
I'll buy that, you know? I don't know. To your point, you know, I was interested in this issue that, you know, we had that scene, obviously, where they're like down there in the whatever, like stinky water. And,
dude.
Okay.
Episode title. Okay.
Stinky water.
Yeah. Down in the stinky water.
Yeah. So, you know, that was an interesting scene, you know, and I liked her contribution, which more or less kind of says like, yeah, you know, you're right. Like, I was just being selfish and obsessed and maybe immature. You know, I thought maybe it was a little, it felt to me like slightly forced, you know, to have them kind of all go around the circle and talk, you know, like they just kind of broke into group therapy.
Mm.
You know, like obviously like that. That was our kind of like entree to see what is happening with all of these characters, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a means to an end.
How'd you feel about that? Cause I'm glad you brought that up. Cause I do want to talk about that page for sure. Because to me, it felt weird, right? It's almost like you've got all this action, right? Because they're running away from the water creature, about to run into the guys that work for Sagan, and you have this page where you have a panel for each character, kind of saying like, "Oh, I'm alone too because this. Oh, I'm alone too because this." Did that feel a little weird to you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it you know, kind of like is maybe a little corny, you know, like I don't know if that's, I don't know, you know, it's tough to say like how natural it is, but you know, whether being natural is really, you know, essential in this medium, you know? Yeah, you know, like I get why they did it, you know, like as a means to an end. Sure. You know, it's like if you can suspend your belief, disbelief a little bit to kind of be like, okay, you know, here they're taking a breath and we get to see what's actually what they're thinking rather than just like what's happening.
Sure.
You know, I do think maybe it's interesting, A, if they are in like sewage, that they could get over that so quickly and have such a kind of like naked emotional experience. You know, they kind of like get past it pretty quick. And also, you know, I'm not sure how they knew that the monster or whatever wasn't going to follow her.
Right. I don't think they knew the monster was going to follow them. But to your point on the other piece, so I found that one page a little jarring. I mean, I understood what it was trying to do, right? Because all these characters have, I don't want to say similar backgrounds, but they're all there for similar reasons, right? Like they're friends with each other because they love each other. I mean, some of them are obviously related, but even the ones that aren't, they consider themselves family. And I think that's pretty typical for a group of people that are maybe seen kind of as outsiders, which all of these characters are, to kind of come together and find some common ground, right? I'm totally with that. It just felt a little weird to stop the action for that kind of reaction, right? And I'm not saying it's bad. I think it adds a little bit more to who these characters are. It just felt like it was in the wrong spot in the book. That's all. But to your point about the sewage, I mean, that's kind of explained at the end, right? In the back matter. Because, you know, the one great thing about this book is that at the end of every issue, you have the additional page of notes from Hell's Dad, kind of talking a little bit about the history of this water system under Manhattan. And it does explain to, in there that they used like this one section. It was like, it wasn't like quite a cesspool, but there was this pool of water that they used to get water out of. They also dumped trash in it apparently. And so it's been that for a long time, but the water that came from this magical pool, came from these streams on the ground, that tie into this lost city. So, I understand what you're saying though. It seems that they got over it quickly. But at the same time, like they were already in the sewer, right? So for one, as bad as that smell is, I think like if you have nowhere else to go, but to a place that already stinks so bad, after a while, it doesn't seem as bad. Number one. Number two, they're pretty much in flight or flight right now, right? Because they're being chased by this creature. So the last thing that they would think about is how bad the place smells. They're trying to save their own lives. So to me, that wasn't that huge a deal.
Sure. No, I'm just joking.
Well, God damn it. I'm trying to be profound and you're joking. This podcast is over.
I like being profound or trying. Being pretentious, certainly.
Oh, dude, I just recorded a podcast, and let me tell you, it was very pretentious.
Ooh, yeah, look forward to that.
Yeah. Anyways,
okay. Let me get back to your point about like stopping the action and whatnot. You know, like, you know, it was kind of a brief moment. So also, I'll give it that, like that maybe in real time, it doesn't actually represent that much time that they're like stopping in all of this before they try to figure out what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting, A, that like, I don't know, and this may be like just the nature of linear storytelling and like cutting forward in time, but you know, like they seem to almost immediately find like a ladder out, but then we don't really see any intermediate thing there as for how they get back to where they started and like why the monster isn't, you know, like on their way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think that feeds into like that kind of like disruption of what's happening, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But then they get to the next scene and it starts moving forward again.
Right, right. So I thought the whole thing with the water monster was interesting as well. So they don't know how this works, right? We don't know how it works. But I think from everything that we've seen, it seems pretty obvious to me that, the monster wouldn't be able to chase him because it's obviously tied to protecting this pool, right? And so once it gets beyond the pool, it loses its power.
Okay. So you think it shouldn't have been able to chase them even as far as it went, like out the pipe or whatever?
Well, no, I mean, I'm okay with that. I just mean like it wouldn't be able to go much further than that, right? Because we've only really seen it at its full power in the pool. And sure, like part of the reason why I feel that way is because the way that it's done through the art, it makes it seem more powerful that way. Because, you know, you get like that splashy scene, right? With like the monster popping out and it's like cool to see, right? It's like when you're watching a horror movie and like the monster pops out of the woods, right? It's like, oh my God, like here's the monster. But there's obviously something magical about this pool of water, right? And like I said, going back to the back matter, that's explicitly stated in the back matter. That's what happens, right? Like, this is a magical place. And if this monster or whatever it is the protector of this place, then it would make sense that it would be tied to, the vicinity of the area it's trying to protect, right? Because once you get beyond a certain point, it doesn't care what you're doing because it doesn't need to protect what it's made to do, right? Like, it's a guardian. It's made to protect this place. And once you go far enough away from the place, it doesn't care what you do. You're not at the place.
Yeah. I mean, but somehow they managed to get back to the pool and, like, the monster isn't, or the whatever it isn't, like, there at that exact moment, you know?
Hmm.
I feel, cause they got the chance to, like, boot up the thing, and open the portal again. And, like, then the thing pops up. And like, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Sagan guys are there in the room. I think then the monster shows up and then Hal like jumps into the portal or.
Yep.
I forget. Maybe I'm misremembering it.
No, the chain of events is, I think, maybe felt a little disjointed at times. So I understand why you might be a little confused. Because they go there, the monster pops out, they get chased out. They're in the sewers trying to figure out if they're going to stay or go. They decide to stay. As they're going back, the Sagan guys show up. And I think that's a little confusing because she uses the radio to radio her dad. Her dad replies. But then you see the Sagan guys. So at first, I think you're meant to believe that it wasn't her dad, that it may have been the Sagan guys. Because it's a visual format, right? So you're not hearing the dad talk. You're seeing the words on the page. So at first I thought it was the Sagan guys responding, but then once she jumps into the pool and she gets to the other side of the cave, you see that it is actually her dad responding. But I think the chain of events was a little weird, because of that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, can we talk about kind of like what he says and, you know, I think the bigger question about like what these creatures are?
Sure. Know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, basically like, says, like, don't come here.
He says, like, yeah, you shouldn't have come here.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of to your point earlier about the back matter, I think there was something in there towards the end about, like, kind of some belief that, you know, these sacred pools of water with the extra gluons or whatever, you know, can act as a portal to this other, I don't know if they called it out as being Atlantis or, you know, like, I feel like they kind of said, like, home of the gods.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so, and I mean, like, certainly ancient people might, you know, call something a god, you know, anything they don't understand, you know?
Sure.
So they could just be, like, aliens.
They could.
You know, so, like, really still we don't know what is their deal and what they want. And if they are dangerous, you know, like, whether Sagan was right to try to shut this all down and keep it all secret.
Yeah, I did like that interaction, right? Because the whole time we've kind of been led to believe that Sagan really just wants this place for their own benefit, right? Either to get technology or learn some science out of it or whatever. But maybe that's not the case. And you're right. I think with this issue, we kind of get that feeling that, you know, maybe Sagan isn't necessarily a bad guy, right? Because they're trying to keep these kids out of it, and her dad is warning her not to go to this place. Why that is, I don't know. And the thing is, I almost wish like we would have, like we would already know a little bit more about why they shouldn't be there, right? Just we're 4 issues in right now. There's only 1 issue left, if I'm not mistaken. And that's going to be a lot to wrap up in 1 issue, right? Go ahead.
I think it said to be continued at the end of the issue.
Right. There's 1 more issue.
Well, usually when there's 1 more issue, they say concluded.
Oh, concluded. But okay. So maybe it's 2 more. Okay.
For what it's worth.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. Fair enough. Semantics, as they say. But, I don't know, man. If there's only 1 more, that's a lot of information to give out in 1 issue, I think. If it's more, then, you know, that's probably okay. If this is a series that's meant to continue at some point, then it would be a good breakoff point when Hell gets to whatever this place is. And to be honest, I would rather see that, right? Because it seems to me like the story that could be told of what this place is, deserves another 5 or 6 issues. You know, I feel like I've been kind of down on this book the last time we talked about it and this time that we're talking about it. But I really enjoy it. I love the subject matter. And I think there's a lot that could be taken out of the story. I just feel like we should be in a different place in this book than we are. And again, I'm not the writer and I'm not a comic book writer, so I'm not demeaning that in any way, shape or form. I just feel like we should be in a different place in the story.
Yeah, I mean, I could have sworn when I checked solicits that there was like a solicitation in December for Lost City Explorers, but I could be mistaken.
Okay, no, if that's the case, that's awesome. Because I love reading this book. I think this whole thing is fascinating. And I want to know more. Like, what, for one, what do the gluons have to do with anything, right? Because that seems like a very large stretch in some ways to mix in gluons with quote-unquote Atlantis, right? Like, gluons are the force that hold protons and neutrons together. So what does that have to do with this pool of water, right? Like, it's a pool of water. And who are the creatures on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the gluons thing could just be kind of a MacGuffin-y explanation, you know? Mm. Like, it sounds scientific, so it's like, okay, that'll work. So I don't necessarily have a problem with that, you know? I'm not a scientist either, so,
yeah.
You know, like, it obviously does seem a little, like, sci-fi-tastic, but, you know, I don't mind that. You know, as far as, you know, what story we're seeing, you know, like, you know, I, kind of, I guess, initially thought that we were going to get to Atlantis or whatever. And, you know, it was going to be, you know, like enlightened beings, you know, and it was going to become like, let's see what Atlantis is, you know, like, what is this thing? But if, you know, they're whatever, scary alien monsters, and it just becomes a, like, let's escape, you know, like, that could lend itself to a shorter story.
Sure. Yeah, I'm curious about that, too, because once Hell goes through the cave into the other side, you kind of see the city off in the distance. But really what you see is what looks like a lot of ruins. And it makes me wonder if, like, there's really anything on the other side. Right? Because why would they just let this stuff go to ruin?
Yes. Well, there, you're talking about the columns and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the columns are definitely in ruins. I thought there was, like, kind of a weird, you know, light, you know, like a blue water construct or something that was, like, in the distance that you saw a glimpse of that, you know, might suggest that there was still something, you know. Clearly there's still beings that are there. And, you know, they strike me as being advanced.
I don't know how clear that is, because the only being we've seen is the one that comes out of the pool. And like I said, if this is like a magical pool, and that's the pool's protector, right, protecting the entrance to this world, then it doesn't have to be anybody else there. It could just be this one thing. But yeah, when she comes out, all you see is the columns, and I mean, there's some buildings, and they're obviously not being taken care of. And it's very possible that whoever these beings are just kind of went back into their city, and the city looks fine, but they don't care about keeping up the entrance to the pool, because they don't care about the pool anymore. But the thing is, like, if they obviously already know that somebody is trying to enter, right? Because you have this creature coming out of the pool. Like, they have to know that somebody's trying to get into it and figure out its secrets. So why not, like, post a guard there? Or, you know, whatever. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, but if it's been kind of closed and inactive for, you know, a few millennia, you know, maybe you could see that them kind of, you know, forgetting or ignoring it, you know.
That's possible.
We don't know how long-lived the beings are, obviously, you know. Like, a millennia could be nothing to one of them, but, you know, like, that, I guess, doesn't bother me, you know. Like,
yep.
Eventually you would stop guarding, you know, a thing when it's been closed for a long time.
Fair enough. All right, let's rate this one up. I'll let you go first on this one.
Okay. I'll go 3.75 out of 5. And also, I just had an observation in this issue, which I don't know if you noticed, which was that one of the characters, I think it was Homer, like, looks like he's wearing a Weezer t-shirt. Like, it doesn't say it in full, but it's, like, most of the word in the fonts. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, I could be off base, but it looked like Weezer to me.
Interesting. I had not noticed. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 3.5 out of 5. I'm still digging it. I just want answers. You know, I think that's the thing. I want to know what's happening in this book, and I just feel like I don't know enough. And I love the world that's being developed so much that I want to know more. That's all. All
right. Yeah. Well, it might be a TV show, though, right? You know, isn't that being pitched for TV?
Dude, I don't know. Maybe.
I thought that it got, like, optioned or something for. I thought that was a news bit.
You might be right. I don't know. So, like, listen, Ronnie's not here, so I don't know.
You know, but if that's the case, you know, you want a big story for that.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And you want seasons and seasons.
I think this would make a great TV show, by the way. I think the way that some of the panels are laid out and the story is progressing, it definitely lends itself well to a TV format. In fact, I think part of the problem I've had with these last two issues is that it lends itself better to a TV format than to a comic book format. And that's not a shot at all. I think that's great because I would love to see this in TV. I would watch the hell out of this TV show. So, all right, let's talk about patience. Patience, conviction, revenge. That's how I want to read it every time. I do.
That's how you're going to refer to it every time.
I don't know how. I can't do that every time we mention the title of this book, but that's how I want to do it. This is written by Patrick Clendon. We've got art by Marco Ferrari. And we've got colors by Patricia Comino and letters by Jim Campbell. All right. So first things first, the setting of this book did not at all jive with what I had in my mind when I read the solicit. Because when I read the solicit, I assumed this was a mob story. And it does seem to be that, except it takes place in this weird near future post-apocalyptic world. Well, actually, you know what? Let me ask you. Can we consider this post-apocalyptic? Because there's no mention of some kind of apocalypse happening. But it takes place in 2040, I believe, is the year given. And most of the issue takes place in the Mojave Desert, not the Mojave Desert, as it's joked around in the book quite a bit. And I want to talk about that. Most of it takes place in the desert. But there's obviously still cities and very technologically advanced cities. I also didn't expect the character designs that we got either. Because, number one, I assumed mob story based on the solicit. And the main character is almost like a steampunk cowboy. With a robot army with him. And I didn't expect that at all. So there was a lot that threw me off, going into reading this book. And I gotta admit, it took me a little bit to get used to what the book actually was.
I will agree with pretty much all of that. For me also, when I was first reading it, I think the first page or two where he's like, starting to launch into retelling this story to a robot who's not having it.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, wait, what? You know, what is this? And I was, you know, but as it unfolded, I definitely was struck by how funny it is.
Yeah.
You know, like how rich it is with, you know, running jokes, like from, you know, the Mojave Desert, like you're talking about, and, like the warning droid and like urine being on things, like all that stuff, like all those jokes landed for me. But the premise is definitely intriguing, you know, because I agree with you. It has trappings of, you know, possible, like post-apocalypse, there is like this futuristic Las Vegas, which we see at the end. And you know, some of it is looking pretty futuristic and then some of it is looking like third world primitive.
Yeah.
And then like we see a glimpse earlier in the issue where he's talking about his parents, about them being like in the struggle, you know, which to me, like signifies some kind of, you know, whatever event that, you know, could be shaping the environment that we're seeing, you know, in this, you know, like, is that maybe the fall of the United States or something?
Sure.
You know? So, they only hint at that, you know, and, you know, also we're seeing, to your point about, the mob and it being a mob story, it it looks like a mob story in terms of the flashbacks, but they couch it all in language of corporations.
Right.
You know, he's like, I'm a corporate man. And the other guy has a lot to say about like corporations. And I just wonder whether, you know, in this premise, like all corporations are mafia or something, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot in here about, there's definitely a lot of statements about how our current society is structured. And I think this story extrapolates a lot of corporate culture into what it could be in 20 years, right? Cause you often see this a lot, and I don't know how much tech you follow, but this is like a kind of a hot topic right now in tech. You've got a lot of like tech CEOs going and having quote unquote meetings, in Congress trying to explain the stuff that they're doing. Mostly like a thinly veiled, political discourse on like, user privacy, for example. And this kind of extrapolates that 20 years down the line. And I think that's something that we see as a sci-fi trope in a lot of these kind of stories, right? I've been watching the Alien franchise of movies this week. I started with Prometheus. I watched Alien Covenant. And then by the end of the week, I'm trying to get to, the last Alien film. But, you know, that's a good example on that, right? Or like Blade Runner. Cause you have like this corporation that becomes so huge that it kind of engrosses everything about a society, right? And everything kind of revolves around that, right? So you have like almost indentured servitude from people, because they end up working for this company because the company's so big that they own all these other companies and you almost have no choice but to work for them. And I think it's really interesting the way that it's done, because it's almost veiled in this, this religious cult thing. The kind of funny but kind of gruesome characters that we meet in the Mojave Desert, right? So as he's trying to travel to Vegas, he meets this group. What are they called? Like the Free People of the Mojave or something like that?
Mojave.
Yeah, Mojave. So that's a running joke through the whole story because the guy says Mojave and the robot, Robot Paul, he's like, did he say Mojave? Isn't it Mojave? And like that comes up many times. And I like that to some extent. I think the way that I like my stories told is a little bit different than yours. I enjoyed that a little bit less, I think, than you did. But I did enjoy it the first few times I heard it. I think for me, the problem was the Mojave Mojave joke, ran a little long for me. Because it came up like six times.
Yeah, not to mention it's, you know, it's much easier to play in something that has audio.
Well, very true. That's very true. But I like that. And, you know, that's kind of the bonding scene too, right? Between these two characters, the guy that leads the Free People of the Mojave, and the main character in the story. Because they both come from a similar background, right? They were both corporate men, and we get mostly the main character storyline on, you know, how he was a company man and how he ended up here. But we do get some similarities in that other guy's story, because he left that world to like start this cult in the desert. And at first it seems pretty innocuous. Where they live a very simple life, right? They're wandering through the desert. But really, like, their ultimate shtick is they find random strangers in the desert and eat them.
Is that what they were trying to do? Like, yeah. I couldn't figure out what his end game was,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and so he enticed them into going to this cave to share a meal because, like, that's part of their culture. They share a meal with strangers. But really, like, the ultimate reason they do that is because they're in the desert and there's no food in the desert. And so they use this meal of grubs to, entrap strangers into taking down their guard. Then they kill them and eat them.
Well, it probably tastes better than Grubbs.
Yes, I would assume so.
I wouldn't know.
I would not know either.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. So I have to say also another thing, like running through all of that sequence is, the warning robot.
I love the warning robot.
Which is, dude, that thing is hilarious, man. You know? And, you know, like, I think it maybe is like superficially similar to like Lion Cat in a way. But I thought it's hilarious. And it's like, you know, A, can you assume that every time it was going off, it was a real, like, legit, you know, like, oh yeah, like, warning. And they ignore it every time.
Well, all right, so I want to ask you about that. Do you think he's ignoring it, or does he... Because it seemed to me like he knew this guy was full of shit. Like, that's the feeling that I got. But maybe it's because I could tell he was full of crap.
Like, we don't see it... We haven't seen it, like, do anything yet aside from this guy, you know? So, I don't know. I guess I'm just confused, you know, when he's got this army of robots that he couldn't just... If he knew that this was really bad news or whatever, he could just be like, yo, check this out. All of these robots have guns. So step aside. We're going to go now. But instead, he's like, let's get Shanghai to a cave and then almost eaten. I don't know. Okay. That just brings up another point to me, which is like the other robots, you know, we haven't seen him do anything.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk to any of them. So I'm wondering maybe if the other robots are decoys or something.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, what is the like, cat with the guitar robot gonna do?
I mean, entertain him. Duh.
Okay.
I don't know, dude.
It's distraction. That's diversion robot.
Yeah, right, right.
So, yeah, I was like, that part I thought was interesting is, you know, the only other robot we've seen talk is the warning bot, and he kind of ignores that. But I don't know. Maybe he's just trying to be a good guy and not be violent, you know. But and yet he's kind of embarking on a crusade of violence against other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit strange, I guess.
Yeah, I dug the quirkiness though. It's a very odd book. I think the narration is weird as well. I think some of it almost feels like narration, but it's not. It's dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But I dug that quite a bit. I think the world that's established, had a lot of depth in just the one issue. but I also feel like some of the stuff that we saw, didn't give me enough on what the world is really about. Because I think there's a big difference in the story that we see through most of the issue in the Mojave with this Free People's cult. And then the story that we see at the end when he finds, what's the guy from Game of Thrones? That guy. What's his name? Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. When he meets up with Peter Dinklage, things change quite a bit, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, terms of that he really does have this plan.
Yeah.
You know, like, the guy was expecting him. He's like, you're late, you know? So it suggests to me maybe that, you know, he really has been waiting for a long time, coming up with the plan, you know, building his robots, you know, but, you know, I think they're going to unveil it gradually.
Mm, okay.
And, you know, also to that token, what exactly is his backstory? You know, the story of his tail, kind of, we get little glimpses of that, you know, like references to a guy that's now living in his apartment. So, you know, I assume with that as well, we'll keep getting breadcrumbs in the next issues.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I think the art style is really cool in this book, by the way. I think it fits the quirkiness quite well. I enjoyed this quite a bit. Like I said, it took me a little bit to get into it. I think, judging by the back matter that was placed in this book, which, by the way, I love back matter. I wish every comic would have back matter in it and have more of it. I know that maybe it's a little difficult, in terms of, you know, the payoff, right? Because it's not story that you're getting, and publishers have to pay extra to put these extra pages in. But I love when we see this kind of stuff, right? I've really dug the back matter in, like, Relay, for example. But I like the back matter in this one because you see, looking at the script, kind of what the writer is trying to do with the book itself. And you know, the back matter here is very different than the back matter in Lost City Explorers, right? That back matter is directly related to the story. This one is only kind of tangentially related to the story. But I love seeing that stuff, and I wish more people would do that kind of thing in their books. I think overall, though, in terms of the book itself, it was a really interesting and quirky beginning, but I really enjoyed it. And what's funny is I wouldn't even mind seeing, like, just a book about the Free People of the Mojave, because I love that whole thing so much. It almost felt like not quite as gruesome, but kind of similar to The Crossed. I don't know if you ever read The Crossed.
I have, yeah.
But it gave me that kind of vibe, and I like that stuff. So I want to see more of it. And you know, judging by the way the book ended, I think the rest of the story will be more within the confines of this futuristic Las Vegas. And so that kind of has me sad that we're not gonna see more of what the world looks like outside of the city. But I think it's very intriguing. So we'll see. We'll see. Are you ready for ratings, or do you have final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think I feel pretty good. Okay, final thought, and I don't have anything to offer on this, but like, his sidekick is named Robot Paul.
Yeah.
Like, that's a strange name for a robot, right?
it is.
First of all, shout out to Paul.
Sure.
Second of all, Paul doesn't listen.
He doesn't.
But, you know, like, the robot seems unnecessary. Unless there's another Paul that he's, like, named after. And he's like, you're Robot Paul.
Well, but does it seem unnecessary? Because Robot Paul saved the day.
Sure, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not, like, it's warning robot. It's not robot warning robot. I don't know.
Yeah, I
don't
know. I hear you.
It's just, it's an interesting, I don't know. Like, maybe we'll see what the other robots are named and it'll become more obvious. But I'm just saying, what if there was a Paul and, like, he programmed this robot to be like Paul, even though Paul, like, annoys him, you know?
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that. And we do know that this character is a maker, right? He created this robot. So there's got to be a conscious decision on naming him Robot Paul. I agree. I think it's pretty interesting. I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go first on this one. Oh, you had more thoughts? Did you have more thoughts?
No. Yeah, you're going first though, right?
Yeah. I'm going to give this one it's tough. It's very tough. I'm going to go 3.75 out of 5. I think there was just a little bit missing for me to be like, this book is freaking awesome. However, I still thought this book was freaking awesome. So there you go.
I'm going to go 5 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Dude, okay. Like, let me just say that, you know, I thought it was hilarious. And
yeah, I think that's the difference.
A lot of, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but at least like that seems like the intent to me. You know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. And I'm glad that you dug that. I'm a curmudgeon-y old man, apparently, and but I tend to shy away from funny stuff in my books. I don't mind the jokes every so often. I enjoy the jokes. But like I said, I think to me, the joke was good the first like two or three times. But when it was repeated like five or six or seven times, to me, it went a little overboard. And that's why, for me, that part of the humor didn't work as well. But I agree. I think a lot of the other stuff was really great. Like you mentioned the warning robot. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just to say that that's kind of the lens that I'm, like, viewing this series.
Yeah, yeah.
Is like, given that it seems, like, intended to be humorous largely or mostly, you know, I'm not maybe expecting as much from, you know, deep sci-fi stuff or, you know, strong character-driven, you know, like, really meaty narrative. You know, like, I think there is elements of that, but, you know, I'm trying not to be too serious about it.
Yep. No, I hear you. I hear you. Man, that might be the most varied rating we've ever had on the show. Usually we're all pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little, like, groupthink thing there, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure it's been more drastic before, but, yeah, you know, it's, you gotta rate them like you see them.
There you go. All right, next week, there's only one book, and that book is Beyonders number 2. God, I can't wait. Can't wait. Written by Paul Jenkins with art by Wesley Sinclair. And, if you remember, this is that weird conspiracy book, which I really enjoyed. Really, really enjoyed. So looking forward to that.
Martin.
Yes.
Are you taking your time off and you're going to dedicate that to cracking the secret code?
So I thought about this. I don't think there's enough in just the first issue to crack the code. So I think I'm going to not bother with it for a couple more issues. I think that's the way.
All right, I'll ask you in 3 months.
Yeah. Ask me when the last issue comes out. I think by that point we'll have all the clues to solve the puzzle. I don't think with one issue we had nearly enough. We'll see. I could be wrong. I reached out to Paul Jenkins. He made a kind of offhanded comment that didn't really answer the question that I was trying to ask. So I think I was on the right page, and that leads me to believe that you'll have to read at least the majority of the series to figure out the puzzle. All right. If you want to get in touch with us, Twitter is the best place. Ronnie, you tell that man he should be ashamed of himself for missing this episode of the Aftershocks Ninja podcast. He is at Rambar316. Travis is a good boy. He's here every week. He can be found at The Great Magnet. I am at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. Thank you for listening, and you'll catch somebody, but not me, next week.
Shock the world.